Chapter 30. Janey Rising Scene 1. Have a cookie? Kelly answered her phone. It was old man Johnston. Now that your boyfriend's been sentenced, we need to talk.
What about?
We both know there was another person who left the cottage that night. Kelly was silent. We both know who that was.
What do you want?
To see you again. Kelly arrived at Johnston's cabin. She was carrying a shopping bag. I brought some cookies.
Would you like me to make us tea?
Yes, that would be nice, like old times.
Okay.
Sit down. I'll make it up for us. Kelly put the bag on the kitchen counter and pulled her hair back from her face. The paper bag made a crinkling sound when she reached into it and pulled out a plate of cookies. She set the plate in front of Johnston. Johnston took Kelly's hand while it was still holding the plate.
So how do you get an essentially good guy to kill for you?
Kelly smiled. That's what I liked about you, no small talk, right to the point. She pulled her hand away.
Okay.
Let's put all our cards on the table. Johnston picked up a cookie.
And so we're beyond, I don't know what you're talking about.
How'd you get him to do it? Kelly turned to Johnston, curved her hips, and gave him a pouty look.
What do you think?
You manipulated him with sex?
I became irresistible to him.
That's what I said.
You manipulated him with sex.
Kelly flipped her hair. The second best way to a man's heart, but I prefer to say I enchanted him. Sounds nicer, sounds like he enjoyed it. Kelly nodded at the cookie Johnston was holding.
I made those especially for you.
Johnston took a bite.
Like I remember.
So, why did you pick him to begin with?
There's a friend of mine from high school, Ariana. She met a guy where she went to college, really fell for him.
Then he dumped her. He wanted to travel and become a famous artist.
He broke her heart.
Your boyfriend?
Yep.
Robert?
You manip.
Excuse me, enchant him to kill your parents, then set it up so he gets caught.
All of this to get even for an old girlfriend of yours?
No.
Not to get even.
But it's the reason I picked him. It devastated her when he left. She quit college and moved back to Chicago.
And, by the way, Ariana's not an old girlfriend, she lives a mile from me.
She and Robert may have shopped in the same stores.
Kelly smirked.
They could have been two aisles apart and not realize it.
Kelly poured the tea and brought the cups to the table.
Robert kept talking about leaving, to go back home, he said.
He had no home.
I knew he wanted to go look for his Ariana. She lived just down the street. She was within his reach the entire time.
You never told him?
Nor her.
I didn't want to risk their getting back together.
She would have gone back to him in a second if she knew he was around.
Kelly sat down and picked up her teacup.
He was perfect for the part, no family, no home, no messy connections or relationships.
Except for Ariana, no one cared about him.
I used Sydney to get him to Chicago.
Who's Sydney? Another friend of yours?
Yeah, and of Ariana's. She worked for an art magazine.
That gave me a perfect way to get to Robert.
I had Sydney contact him and tell him the magazine wanted to do an article on him.
A magazine in Chicago wanted to do an article on Robert?
They never heard of him.
So Sydney is in on your scheme?
The only thing she knew was to lure Robert to Chicago and then dump him.
Getting him to move here was pretty simple.
Kelly giggled.
He thought he was going to get to shack up with her.
Guys are so easy.
Setting up that he live in the guest house took a little more work.
I needed to keep him close so I could.
Entrance him?
Yeah.
And keep an eye on him.
Sam had surveillance cameras all over the place.
He had no interest in them.
Kelly smiled.
But I did.
I hid one in Robert's bedroom.
She couldn't suppress a snicker.
And he thought he was the voyeur.
Kelly took a sip of her tea.
The problem was that Robert may have been good-looking, but he's not a very good artist.
He was never going to be up and coming.
So I bribed someone at the magazine to run the article in their next issue.
I left a copy on Elaine's desk.
She had Sam's agent contact Robert the same day.
Once he moved in, I had him. The only wrinkle was he wanted to leave to find Ariana. So I told Sam about Robert using photographs of me as models for painting his porn. The look on Sam's face, I had to force myself not to laugh. Isn't that funny? Sam had drooled over those paintings, probably even masturbated to them, but he never figured out it was me. He never really saw me. He heard me though. Boy, did he hear me when I told him it was me. He was mad as hell for about 5 minutes, enough time to scare the crap out of poor Robert. But then Sam figured out how to make money out of the situation. Robert wasn't going anywhere after that. Johnston picked up another cookie and started munching on it. Aren't you going to have any? I'm on a diet, need to watch my figure. You look fine. You don't need to diet. So you checking me out? Just a connoisseur appreciating something beautiful. Johnston looked down at his teacup, swirled it for a moment, then took a sip. How long have you been planning it? I hated Sam from the beginning, when he first started dating my mother. It wasn't much after that I knew I was going to kill him. Johnston swirled his cup again, watching the bits of tea twirl around in the bottom. Do you remember why, Kelly? Why you hated him so much you wanted to kill him? Kelly looked at Johnston. She tried to think. That was not a question she remembered ever asking herself. She wanted to kill Gallo for so long. It had always been that way. The why, if there ever had been a why, had long been forgotten. She shrugged. It just was. Well, why now? Why have them killed now? That was easier. Kelly knew that one. Sam was redoing his estate plan and was cutting me out. He had found Jesus. Or, at least, he started to be afraid it was all true, you know, heaven and hell. He was trying to purchase some kind of place in heaven. God knows he needed to do something. He decided to buy his way in with my inheritance. He was giving everything to charity. I found his will on his desk, the original, and a copy he had made. Elaine must have done something right when she got Sam to marry her. Sam had no one else but his new blushing bride and precocious, darling stepdaughter. His original will left everything to Elaine and then to me. Kelly leaned over toward Johnston and sneered. I guess a few years with his new family changed his mind. Kelly zigzagged her hand several times on the table. He had crossed out and marked up the copy with the changes he wanted. Elaine would have limited income for the rest of her life, then nothing. He gave me nothing. In fact, the day Sam died, I was to be cut off and basically thrown out in the street. Where is the copy now? Kelly smiled. And what copy would that be? Johnston took a cookie and sat back in his chair. So you get your boyfriend to kill them? Besides your obvious charms, what did you promise him? A big chunk of your inheritance, I would guess. How's the cookie? Johnston bit. I guess I'm part of your scheme now. That isn't what I planned. Why did you even go up the path that night? Well, I had woken up to go to the bathroom when I saw a car go by, heading toward the Gallos. I wondered about that because I knew they had driven up earlier and had not left. Who could be visiting them at this late of an hour? Kelly interjected. Yeah. I wanted to hide in the cottage before Robert got there. I left home right after I let Travis screw me. God's gift, one time and he's out for the night. Of course, I gave him a little something to help with that. You drugged him? Couldn't take the chance he might wake up in the middle of the night. Johnston snorted, then continued. About 15 minutes later, another car drove up that way. It didn't go as far as the first one and parked in that little turnaround spot. Now I was really curious, so I got dressed and went out to see what was going on. I was walking up the path when your boyfriend came stumbling down through the brush. Johnston chuckled. He was within 10 feet of me, and he never even saw me. I saw him leave, but two cars had gone up. I figured someone else was still there, so I hid and waited. About 20 minutes later, I saw a girl carrying a shopping bag come down. I was off the path a little bit, and there was only moonlight, but, except for the short hair, I recognized it was you. Kelly chimed in. It was me? The short hair threw me a little. I figured you were wearing a wig, a disguise, or something. I knew you were up to something. Johnston shook his head. Why'd you stay in there after the murders? Why do you think? Johnston finished another cookie. Okay. To make sure none of the changes to the estate documents were there, that there were no other copies. Johnston nodded in understanding. That would leave only the original will. The one that, with your mother dead, gives you everything. He looked at Kelly. You didn't leave much to chance. Only you, you're my weak link. Johnston continued as if he had not heard Kelly. So you're hiding at the cottage when Robert gets there, and... Damn, Kelly, I can't picture this. This is what's been bothering me, while he's murdering them. How could you do that? How could you stay still while that's being done? The newspapers had some pictures. You wanted him dead, but like that? You shouldn't mind Sam's dead. You said you'd like to kill him. No, I said, someone should kill that man. But not like that. God, not like that. How could you stand by while he did that to them? Don't get high and mighty on me. You didn't report me to the police. You knew something was up. What did you think that was all about? A surprise birthday party? Let's get to it. What do you want? Johnston felt his nose running, fast, like when he had a nosebleed. He grabbed a tissue from his pocket and wiped his nose. When he looked at it, it was clear. He dabbed his nose a couple of times, then put the tissue back in his pocket. I didn't know what was going on. Johnston shook his head. I didn't know. That was going on. When I called the police, I only told them about your boyfriend, I never mentioned the second person, I never mentioned you. Why is that? You figured you could get something from me? I wasn't thinking that. You don't do anything without a reason? I was trying to protect you. And yet, here we are. What do you want? Johnston stared at Kelly. Then he remembered what he had rehearsed. You have something I want, and I have something on you. We can trade. I guess that might be on your mind when you called me. So what are we trading? Johnston lost his train of thought. Kelly, we were friends for a long time. Those times are gone. We're not going back there. I miss our talks. Is that all you miss? Johnston forgot to close his mouth, and saliva and cookie crumbs were dribbling down his chin. He wiped it with the back of his hand. I miss you. Stay on track. How are we going to settle this? Kelly asked. Johnston was trying to focus. That clubhouse. That damn clubhouse. Let me tear it down. But that makes a lot of money. Johnston held his head up with his hands. Sam probably used it to launder. Well, I'm getting everything Sam had. Maybe I'll need a laundry. Kelly. We've been friends. Kelly didn't say anything. She watched Johnston like a bird of prey watches as its wounded quarry weakens. Johnston's hands dropped to the table, his teacup tipped over, spilling the rest of the tea. Kelly, what have you done? Just something to help you sleep. Johnston tried to get up, but his legs weren't working. Kelly stood and put her hands on Johnston's arms, pressing them against the table. You asked how I could get an essentially good guy to kill for me. I don't know. I couldn't. He didn't go through with it. Robert's attorney interviewed me. He was sure I was behind the whole thing. He wanted to know who I got to do such brutal murders. He wondered who could do such a thing. Did one of Sam's associates? Did Travis? He couldn't see, as you didn't. He couldn't believe, murders with such violence, as you didn't. He couldn't understand, as you didn't, such cold bloodlessness. But you understand now, don't you, Alfred? You believe now, don't you? Evil can wear a pretty face. Her voice became dark, animal. Alfred, you see me now. A sob escaped from Johnston. She leaned close to his face, her eyes feral. I didn't get a mob guy to do it. Johnston turned his head away from her, tears running down his cheeks, snot dribbling from his nose and onto his mouth and chin. Travis is a jerk, but he's not stupid. She grabbed and turned Johnston's head, forcing him to look at her. Robert was too weak. Johnston looked away. Look at me, she hissed. Johnston turned his eyes. Kelly moved so close they could have kissed. So I did it myself. Scene 2. I killed him. Fingers move over his chest. That's the first thing as he comes out of the blackness. Fingers on his chest and nipples, down his stomach, then back up. Fingers on his naked skin. Something is pressing across his face and eyes. He tries to open them, all is gray. The fingers move down again, onto his hips, his groin, he jumps. The fingers grasp his balls, his legs jerk. He can't pull them together. His arms are held fast above his head. The cabin's cool air drifts over his body, nipples, feet, his pubic hair. He wants to slip back into the blackness, but the fingers keep nudging him awake. Kelly, are you here?
Yes, I'm here.
Johnston gasps as a hand caresses his penis. He tugs at the cuffs holding him to the bed. Fingers pluck at his pubic hair before turning back down and rotating around his balls.
What are you doing?
Can't you feel it?
I'm going to pleasure you like you always wanted.
He's still groggy. The hand continues its circling up around his stomach, then back down, making him jerk and catch his breath each time it grazes across his balls.
All those years, you watched me, wanting to play with me to play with you.
It was never like that.
I was your friend.
I told you stories of my travels.
We shared secrets.
To fondle me.
You were a companion to a lonely old man, and I was company for a neglected young girl.
Johnston's body is jerking from the attention Kelly is giving it. He's yanking at the binds on his arms and legs, struggling to break free. His breathing becomes quicker.
Let me go.
What the hell do you think you're doing?
We're pleasuring you to death.
He laid still.
You can't kill someone like that.
No?
What about someone who has a bad heart?
The mattress rises as a weight gets off. He can hear the shopping bag from across the room rustle as something is taken out of it, then water from the sink filling a container. The mattress sinks.
Here, take these.
Objects are pushed into his mouth. Then an arm lifts his head, and a glass put to his mouth.
Drink this and swallow the pills.
He spits them out, shakes his head, and shuts his mouth tight. Water spills down his chin. The glass with the cold water slides down his chest and stomach, then presses against his balls. He sucks in his breath.
I can make this really hurt.
Are you going to take the pills?
He shakes his head.
The glass is thrust against him and seesawed across his balls. He recoils, cries out, then nods. Fingers push the pills through his mouth, and to the back of his throat, he gags. The glass is put to his lips, and water fills his mouth. He swallows and chokes as the pills move down his throat.
Here's another, open wide.
That's a good boy.
Couple more to go.
He is gasping for air.
Last one.
What were those?
Party drugs, bought off the street, drugs an old man with a young girlfriend might take, good for the sex, not so great for the heart.
It was a fun party.
Dark voice.
Too bad you died.
The police will suspect you.
Your fingerprints and DNA are all over this cabin.
Suspect us?
The voice laughed.
Hell, they'll do more than suspect us.
I'm going to tell them we're the one who killed you.
Fingers run over his chest, his nipples, down his stomach.
His face is hot, pressure builds in his head.
After a while, the fingers stroke him to hardness, harder than he can remember in years.
I see the drugs are working.
Kelly, please stop.
I need to slow down.
Let me go.
This is the game you like to play, lover.
No one will believe we were lovers.
Oh, we've been lovers since we met.
I have such beautiful notes you wrote me.
I was lonely, looking for someone to give me attention.
And boy, did you.
Voice.
You're a dirty old man who is going to get what's coming to you.
I never touched you.
Not in that way.
Johnston feels the mattress rise as someone gets off.
He hears Kelly's voice from across the room.
Remember that book you gave me?
Lolita.
I brought it with me.
The shopping bag on the kitchen counter crinkles. Then the mattress sags as someone sits next to him. I had you write a note in it.
Remember what the note said?
To my Kelly.
You are the fresh light in my dark life.
You are my darling charmer.
My enchanter.
From your bewitched traveler.
Voice.
They'll find the book next to your body.
Kelly.
All those years, I thought you were.
Almost like a father.
Then I read the book.
I saw what you really thought of me.
Johnston.
You were a pretty girl.
You liked to tease me.
I could tell that.
So sometimes I had feelings, some fantasies at night, some images.
But I never acted on those.
Voice.
You sinned in your heart.
Thumbs are put on the blindfold over his eyes and pressed.
Do you want your eyes plucked out or your balls smashed?
Pain radiates through his head.
Ugh.
Kelly, stop.
The pressure on his eyes releases.
It wouldn't look like much of a game if they find you without your eyes.
The voice chants.
Kiss the boys and make them cry.
Make them cry.
Make them cry.
His head jerks up, who are you?
Voice.
Kiss the boys and make them cry.
Johnston.
Kelly, who?
The dark voice is laughing.
Kiss the boys and make them die.
Johnston.
Who's there?
Kelly.
You came along later.
Voice.
Don't you remember, sweetheart?
I've always been with you.
Kelly pauses as if listening to a statement.
He won't.
Then, dark silence.
Kelly speaks to the darkness.
No, I can't anymore.
We need to.
He's never done anything wrong to us.
You don't remember very well.
Why should we kill him?
Because we want to.
Johnston.
Who's talking?
Kelly.
No, leave me alone.
Voice.
I'll never leave you alone.
Johnston.
Kelly, who are you talking to?
Janie.
Janie?
There's no Janie.
We've talked about this.
Janie is your make-believe playmate.
Voice.
Playmate?
I guess we have played.
But does this feel like make-believe?
A hand grips Johnston's balls, making him wince, then squeezes him.
He is in agony, sweating, breathless.
Stop, stop.
Please.
The hand moves onto his chest, it feels like a great rock pressing down on him.
Voice.
You need to pay for what you did.
Johnston, gasping through breaths.
Kelly, don't you remember when you were 15?
We spent a good part of that summer talking.
Don't you remember?
We talked about it.
You confided in me.
Kelly.
Stop talking.
I'm trying to hear him.
Voice.
Not when he's talking about me.
Johnston.
You could never escape him?
It became too horrible for you to bear.
Kelly.
He was mean.
Voice.
Mean?
He was a sadist.
Johnston.
Your mother didn't want you. And your stepfather wanted you too much.
You were abused.
I know it.
Horribly.
But where did it happen?
Kelly.
Shut up.
Johnston.
It wasn't here, was it?
It wasn't me that came into your room at night.
No.
I said, shut up.
Close your eyes.
Who do you see?
Who was your burglar protecting you from?
The hand digs into his stomach.
Mommy, help me.
That summer, we peeled away all your layers.
You saw it then?
No.
Sam got you pregnant.
Then he and your mother, don't you remember?
Kelly is sobbing.
Kelly, the truth.
You've always said you wanted the truth.
Kelly's voice becomes higher pitched.
She's bursting.
Her breathing is fast, and so loud Johnston can hear her over his own.
No.
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 Johnston.
Why don't you remember?
Voice, yelling.
Because it wasn't her they did it to.
Johnston, yelling.
Had it aborted.
Kelly screams.
No.
And then it was quiet.
Kelly, are you here?
Kelly?
Kelly's gone.
The mattress sags as of someone climbing onto it. Kelly wanted to use a gun. It turned out we had to use a knife. Do you know what I did to them with a knife?
Cold fear pierces him.
Those news stories.
Nothing.
Nothing like that. It was so much better.
Terror.
Run.
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 Arms, legs paralyzed.
Fingernails scrape down his chest.
It's time to go.
Hips buck as the nails go further.
Panicking, breathing hard, fast, heavy, can't get enough air.
His heart beating so quick he can't catch up to it, so terrible he hears it in his head, thump, thump, thump.
Pain radiates from his back and up his arms.
He tries to talk, he can only gurgle.
Thump, thump, thump.
He gasps.
Who?
Thump, thump.
Pain shoots through him.
He tries to sit up, the ropes hold him tight to the bed.
Thump.
His mouth opens to take a breath.
Hands slide up his chest.
The thumping stops.
He makes a shallow, sucking noise.
The hands reach along the sides of his face.
His body convulses.
Fingers take hold of the blindfold and pull it down.
He sees her.
She tears the blonde wig from her head.
Her hair is short, black, crazy, crazy black.
The face leers at him.
Janie.
Then everything flashes white, evaporates, and he falls into blackness.
The tape recording of the call to the police reflects the hysteria of a young girl.
I killed him. I killed him.
Chapter 31.
I am the artist.
I'm glad it's a knife.
A gun would have been too clean, too quick, too easy on them.
Would Robert do it?
That simple Kelly couldn't.
She said she would, but the truth is not in her.
As for Robert?
Well, we'll wait and watch.
I creep into their room, hiding in the closet, the door cracked so I could spy, waiting, listening to their breathing, trying to control mine.
Wait.
Those places, those doctors.
Fools.
Well, Kelly they got right, delusional, depressed, suicidal, she always was the weak one.
They struggled to name me, schizophrenia, paranoia, antisocial personality disorder, what a mouthful, I laughed at that one.
Why didn't they just call me insane?
They should have.
Darwin was right.
It's not the fittest that survive, it's the most adaptable.
I ran and hid.
They couldn't find me.
I became invisible.
Metamorphosis, I like that word.
A complete change of form, structure, or substance, as transformation by magic or witchcraft.
Kelly became my chrysalis.
Now here I am, a beautiful butterfly.
Beautiful butterfly, ha.
We were all in a car once, he was driving, we were going to the cottage.
The bitch was in the front, I in the back.
She said, oh, look at the road, how beautiful, it's covered by monarch butterflies.
It was too.
There were so many the road looked like it had a shifting orange blanket covering it.
We got out to see.
The bitch threw up.
The butterflies were gorging on the carcasses of locusts.
I am the devourer.
Wait.
Bird beaks peck, penises spurt, knives cut.
I suppress a giggle.
They all thought Kelly was the primary one.
I could hear them talking.
I was just an alterne, her shadow.
How insulting.
When she raised her hand, it was me who raised it.
When she opened her mouth, it was me who opened it.
When she spoke, it was the words I gave her.
When she looked at you, it was me who saw you.
I am the watcher.
Wait.
In the beginning was the darkness, and the darkness was in Kelly.
I am the darkness.
I am unforgiving fury hunting for release.
You thought he was the artist.
What did he create for you?
I am the great creator.
Where was he when I laid the earth's foundation?
Can you tell me that?
When I marked off its dimensions?
Surely you know.
Who stretched a measuring line across it?
On what were its footing set,
or who laid its cornerstone, you think he did that?
Who shut up the sea behind doors when it burst forth from the womb?
Assuredly, he did not.
He's afraid of a waiting pool.
I fixed its limits and set its doors and bars in place.
This far you may come and no farther, I commanded it,
here is where your proud waves halt and it obeyed. Do you think in his weak astronomy classes he learned to comprehend the vast expanses of the earth? Tell me if you know. Can his science bind the chains of the Pleiades? Can it loosen Orion's belt? Can he bring forth the constellations and their seasons or lead out the bear with its cubs? Does he know the laws of the heavens? You thought Robert was the artist. Fools, I am the artist. Wait. Oh, they need to die. Where is that damn Robert? Oh fury, be still, be patient. No forgetting, no forgiving. I am the messenger. Hear me. Your day of disaster is near, and your doom rushes upon you. Oh, where is that Robert? But wait. I hear the door. You're coming into the house, you bungling fool, making enough noise to wake the dead. I giggle. But not Sam and Elaine, not yet, they're not dead, yet. Now in the kitchen, rummaging in the drawer. Oh, idiot. I should tear your throat apart. Now up the stairs. There you are. Look at him. He is such a wimp. I want to leap out and consume him. Such a bubbling, stupid, naive puppet, my puppet. Yes. Look this way, Robert, see the burning in my eyes. Look this way, Robert, and see your destruction. You are my imperfect sacrifice. Wait. Raise the knife, Robert. Yes. Raise it high. Oh, glorious murder, now strike. Oh, Robert, you are such a disappointment. No matter, I'll take care of this myself. This is your last time here, Robert, remember it. Wait for him to leave the room. Wait, give him time to get out of the house. A little longer. Down the path. Everybody loves a lover. I'm a lover, oh yes I am. Wait. Wait. Now. I leap from the closet in a whirling, writhing, contorting, convorting, lurchy, jerky, crazy syncopated jig, a cacophony of screeches, shrieks, and howls. He is awakened by my danse macabre. His eyes open to the clankering, dancing skeleton before him. The shock on his face, first uncomprehending, then fear, then terror. I wanted to see that, needed to see that, waited to see that. Then striking, slashing, oh the screaming. The bitch tried to get away. I clutched her arm with my nails and gripped her while I finished him, then I started on her. Oh fury, are you now satisfied? Warm, so warm. And slippery. I hadn't realized how slippery. Was that in my plans? I had been so scrupulous to not miss any detail. Be careful, don't let the knife slip and cut yourself. That may be hard to explain. Oh well, improvise, Janie. You've always been good at that. And remember to take Puppet's shirt off. Yes. And to properly dispose of it. Yes. And make sure to erase the door alarm recording my entry. Only one person entered this place tonight. Yes. What's that, Elaine? May I call you Elaine? Thank you. What happened to your breasts? Oh, you must remember all those stories you tell at cocktail parties. There's no time for a child now. And, breastfeeding would have been such a bother. I'd never have gotten my figure back. And Elaine, dear Elaine, you never did have a heart for me. And Sam, you should see how silly you look. You like to have your cock in my mouth. Now it's in yours. What was that? I'm sorry, you're hard to understand. Oh, you have no eyes to see, nor ears to hear? Well, you never did use those very well anyway. And Sam, sweet Sam, if I may say so, you got no balls. Oh, no thank you, dear friends, I would love to stay and chat some more, but honestly, I must be running. I have so much more to do. Chapter 32. Penance. Scene 1. There's no frosting on the cake. Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. I broke a young girl's heart. Very well, my son. For your penance, say 3 Hail Marys and go to prison for the rest of your life. Robert did not give them Kelly. But it was not for Kelly. It was for Ariana. Perhaps his sacrifice, even flawed, would make some amends. Ariana would never know of it, would not have wanted it as she had. He was sentenced to life. A man sins, a man pays. He is allowed 1 hour a day for recreation. Today's prediction of a late winter storm caused the exercise yard to be closed. That was all right with Robert. He preferred to spend his hour in the crafts room anyway. He tried to spend most of his 1 hour there, using the time to draw portraits of the inmates. He had wanted to capture the soul of America. Now he was. The double murders had made him infamous. His art made him famous. Robert's work during his porn period was seen as a metaphor for society's preoccupation with hedonism. His current work in charcoals, Robert is not allowed anything sharper than a charcoal stick, as an exposé of society's shadow, dark side. Robert smiled. Even his early work with the little signature, Bob, followed with the date of one of his two lost years, was now sought after. Today he's drawing a portrait of Thaddeus Reminsky Tinkerton, who everyone calls Brains. Old nicknames are hard to get rid of, the two had formed a bond. Robert and Brain shared most of the stories of their lives. One of the inmates walking by had once muttered, "They're spilling their guts out to each other again." Brains had been convicted and sentenced for theft through a computer theft scheme. It was imaginative, brilliant, and inspired, it was magnificent, except he got caught. Getting caught was as much a surprise to the authorities who caught him as it had been to Brains. He had come in a few months before Robert. When he was new to prison, Brains, as is customary for some in such circumstances, became born again. The testimony of his salvation was one he liked to share with all or none who were willing or not to listen. On one of his first Sundays in prison, with the promise of an hour break from the stifling boredom of prison life as the inducement, Brains went to the prison's chapel. There were perhaps 30 other inmates. Most were in the front, raising their arms and closing their eyes to an unseen God. Brains sat in the back with one group who thought it was more fun to make fun of the pastor who had come to speak to them. The man apparently drove several hours every Sunday to come to the prison to preach to the inmates. Brains did not snicker out loud with the others. He simply, silently shot logical holes through everything the man said. At the end of the service, the man asked if anyone was ready to be saved, if so, to raise their hand. No one did. Brains thought, what a waste of time. He's already gotten everyone here who's going to do it. Why is he bothering? The man looked disappointed. The next Sunday, Brains went again. It was a break after all. At the end of the service, the man asked if anyone was ready to be saved. Someone sitting next to Brains snickered, every Sunday. No one raised their hand. The man lowered his head as he dismissed the meeting. Jesus, Brains thought, how much rejection can this guy take? Every Sunday? The third week at the end of the service, the man again made his altar call. Is there anyone ready to commit their life to Jesus Christ? No one raised their hand. Is there anyone ready to become a new person in the body of Christ? No one raised their hand. The man looked like he was about to cry. He was so disappointed. He was about done. Is there anyone ready to accept the peace of Christ? No one moved. The man lowered his head. Brains felt embarrassed for the man. Brains raised his hand. The man looked up, a mixture of joy, triumph, and surprise on his face. Come up, brother, and I will pray for you. Brains got up and stepped forward, past the turned faces of the other inmates. Oh, shit, what have I done? The man did pray for him and talked with him after all the other inmates had left. He gave Brains a Bible. I have brought this with me every Sunday for 3 weeks to give to you. That book has never left Brains' side. In the beginning, Brains was more enthusiastic than accurate, and his enthusiasm knew no bounds as he searched through his Bible, pursuing its table of contents, concordance, annotations, indexes, cross-references, and notes as nimbly as he used to do when he could hypertext through the internet. He is no longer allowed access to a computer, pulling a phrase here, a line there, perhaps even a full paragraph over there. He followed the links. They all became a jumbled theology in Brain's brain. Somehow it made sense to him. He tried to impress that sense on Robert. Robert was tiring of it.
If you're going to preach, at least get it right. Tell me what your book says, not what you want it to say.
Brains put on his reading glasses. He was prepared to start at the beginning.
So, do you have any idea what it says?
My dad was a janitor at our K-12 Catholic school. He got free tuition for me, so I went there.
So, yeah, I got a lot of religion.
Brains lifted his Bible.
So, did you read this?
Some parts in some textbooks, but we never just read the Bible.
Brains looked at Robert questionably.
True. I asked one of the sisters why we studied all this stuff written by other people, the Pope, bishops, the Catechism, about what the Bible says instead of simply reading it. She said, and these words are burned into my mind, because we're not smart enough and we need someone else to tell us what it says.
You didn't talk back to nuns, so I didn't.
But I thought, I'm as smart as anyone else. I'll figure this out for myself. It was at that moment that I became un-Catholic.
So how has that worked out for you?
Robert smiled, well, I'm here, aren't I?
So, what have you done to work it out on your own?
Nothing. I guess I always thought I'd get to it when I had more time.
They looked at each other, an amused look forming simultaneously on both faces.
Brains couldn't resist.
So you're doing life.
How much more time do you think you'll need?
Robert continued smiling, focusing on his sketch.
Brains continued.
You don't need to earn your forgiveness, Robert, you just need to believe, and it will be given to you.
We don't do penance.
That's a Catholic thing.
We do good works.
Penance is something you have to do.
Good works is something you want to do.
Robert glanced up.
Hold still. I'm trying to finish this.
He'll never be finished with you, you understand that, Robert.
He has tenacity.
Robert put the sketch pad on his lap.
You want tenacity?
Tenacity is the human race. In spite of God's curse, women continue to bear children, and men continue to plant and harvest to feed those children.
That's tenacity.
If every one of those women, and every one of those men lined up and raised their hands, I believe.
Would that be enough for you?
It wouldn't prove the truth.
Robert thought for a moment.
Maybe the real problem is I don't want to join up.
You serve a bloody God.
I serve a loving God.
You serve the God you want, not the God that is.
You can trust in Him.
He is jealous.
Forgiving.
Vengeful.
Just.
Just?
Robert took Brain's Bible and looked for the passage he had remembered from one of his textbooks.
I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me.
Should my great-great-grandchild suffer for what I did?
Is that just?
You don't have any kids, Brains thought to make sure.
Do you have any kids?
No, not that I know of.
But am I sitting here in prison for something some distant relative I don't even know did?
And have you considered my man, Job?
Robert laughed.
Boy, did Job get a screw job from God.
He had been waiting to use that one on Brains.
Brains took back his Bible.
He decided he was not getting anywhere with that God.
Okay, forget the Old Testament.
How can you not look at a beautiful sunset and not see God?
Ash from forest fires.
The blue of the ocean.
Tsunamis.
The cooling breeze on your face on a hot summer day.
Hurricanes.
God can only do good.
Good?
When it's good, you believe it's because of God.
When something bad happens, it's because of the devil.
Unless God wanted to teach you a lesson, then it wasn't bad.
It was good, except you just didn't know it.
You need help.
I'll pray for you.
Oh, the great Christian cop-out, I'll pray for you.
Forgive my responsibilities, Father, for I have prayed.
We're off the main point.
Brains thumped on his Bible.
I'll make it simple for you, Christ died for your sins.
He was the perfect sacrifice.
Yeah, I know, I've heard that.
But you didn't get it, Brains persisted.
It's like you.
Pretend you're Christ.
You're living the good life. running free, doing what you want. That's Christ up in heaven. Then he comes down to earth. You go to Chicago. He gets tempted by the devil. You tie in with that girl, the devil. She tempts you and leads you down the path of sin and depravity. Okay, that part's just you. Anyway, in the end, she's a conniving, manipulative, deceptive bitch that sets you up to take a fall for her. Is this the Christ story we're talking about or mine? And by the way, I don't remember saying anything negative about Kelly. Stay with me here. I'm trying to make a point. You sacrifice for her. You give up your freedom and come here, which is pretty much like dying. That's what Christ did, died for us imperfect humans. Okay, but as I remember the story, Christ got to go to heaven afterward. I'm still stuck here. It's the dying, not the rising that matters. The dying was the sacrifice. The rising was just proof of it. It was like frosting on a cake. You just didn't get the frosting. Yeah, well, I'd just as soon not have the cake either. Not if it's anything like what they served us last night. Brains laughed. I wondered why you broke your piece apart and gave it to those other two guys. And then you gave them your glass of grape juice as well. Yeah, well, they were having trouble swallowing the cake. Take off your reading glasses, will you? I'm trying to finish this. Robert broke some charcoal on his paper and focused on smudging it around the chin of his drawing of brains. His stay in Chicago had started with a suicide he couldn't complete and ended with murders he didn't commit. In the middle was an angel that had entranced him. He wasn't angry with them, the Gaios, Kelly. They were just trying to get through this the best they could, the same as him. They had been set up, same as him. Who he was angry with was God, for the setup. Christ had it easy. He came to earth to see what it felt like to be human, to suffer as we do. He couldn't do it. The rising did matter. Christ always knew that was before him. He was going to get the frosting. And that made all the difference in the world. All Robert could see, all he had ever been able to see, was the black hole at the center of his universe. The only sound he heard, the only sound he had ever heard, was the hollow beating of a drum echoing through that hole. Except, for one brief moment, there had been a light. It had shined for him from out of the darkness. In a twinkling of time, he had heard its promiseful chiming. Ariana? Once upon a time she had been in his life, and she had known him, and she had loved him, and that made all the difference in the world. Robert's thoughts were interrupted by a breaking news story on the television. Everything is considered breaking news on television. There was a photo of a girl on the screen. Her hair was still short but now dyed black, but it definitely, and defiantly, was Kelly. No charges are being brought against Kelly Heffernan, seen here leaving her attorney's office. Recently orphaned by the murder of her parents, the young heiress was under investigation for the death of Alfred Johnston. Johnston had been found dead last month, naked and tied to his bed. It was determined he died from a heart attack brought on by extreme stress. According to Heffernan, the couple often played bondage games. Apparently, the last one was too much for Johnston. Police report it was a lover's game gone terribly wrong. Townspeople indicated Johnston was not well liked and were surprised Heffernan had anything to do with him. One of the townspeople was heard to say, "If you gotta go, what a way to go." Brains turned to Robert. "Hey, I recognize that girl. She was crazy. How do you know her?" "Showed up in town one summer. She had long blonde hair then. She was a Lakey, we were townies. The Lakeys had money, we didn't. She had a game she wanted to play. She got me out in the woods, took my clothes off, tied me up on a big rock, and then really went to work on me." "Were there others that she worked on?" "It was just me as far as I know. No one talked about it. Look, we were guys. If anyone was getting any, it was talked about. The others were horny, but not crazy. No one would go out with her when they found out what she wanted to do." "Why did you?" "She was a girl, she smiled at me." Robert nodded. "Yeah, guys are easy. Listen. I was a 20-year-old virgin nerd. I was crazy horny. Hell. I figured it was my only chance. But her name's not Kelly. It's Janie.
Are you sure about that?
That person you said had long, blonde hair.
This one.
She had me out there, tied up, and worked me over for hours. Never let me come, you know? Her face, she kept it near mine, almost the entire time, smiling, cooing at me, licking my face. I remember her crooked smile like she was mocking me the whole time. She finally let me go and laughed at me.
Yeah, I remember her real well.
She climbed into my mind and has never left. I still fantasize about her at night and what she did to me.
You fantasize about a girl not letting you come?
Mine end differently. But I'm sure of her.
She's still smiling.
Yeah, that's Janie.
Was there anyone else with her?
Two of them.
Jesus, no.
One was enough.
There was just her.
Then Robert understood.
Janie had killed 5 people.
The Gaios, that's 2.
Johnston, 3.
Her own namesake, 4.
And Kelly, Janie killed Kelly.
Robert looked at his sketch of brains.
A smile of satisfaction drew across his face.
It was finished.
And now for another late breaking news story.
Robert thought the announcer had added, "No, this time it's really true."
But maybe not.
It didn't matter, he hadn't been paying attention?
We've been predicting this storm, but we're not sure when it would hit us.
Well, folks, keep your galoshes out and your snow shovels handy because it's here.
And it's a doozy.
It looks like spring is going to be a while.
Scene 2.
0K.
Janie left her attorney's office. She was 21, had barely graduated high school, had not gone to college, and today she was taking over the Chicago empire of the recently deceased Sam Gallo. The meeting with her attorney, the former Sam Gallo's attorney, nominally had been to discuss the district attorney's decision to not prosecute her for the death of Alfred Johnston. But that was not Janie's purpose. She always assumed exoneration, that's how she had planned it, after all.
No, the real reason was to discuss the takeover. She spent years gathering the information captured by Sam's surveillance system. What money flowed from who to who, and what accounts it was in, and how to access those accounts, was in her control. Her years of sitting in the perch were about to pay off. The politicians, bankers, and concubines that had genuflected before Gallo would now bow to her. She was a formidable foe and would need to be done away with quickly, or quickly learn to be lived with. Janie got in her car and headed back to the mansion, hers now. She was delayed by a high wind that foretold the approaching storm. The wind was distracting drivers, some of them running off the road or hitting other cars. It snarled traffic for miles. When she finally got home, she found the housekeeper, Mary, had left a note. The coming storm had her scared. She had gone home. That was fine with Janie. She wanted to be alone. She planned on firing the woman anyway. She wandered through the house, her footsteps echoing in the empty rooms. Janie went out to the patio. The wind now carrying rain mixed with snow blew against her face. She went to the gazebo, to the spot. The storm grew more intense. Hailstones thudded across the lawn, then pounded on the gazebo's metal roof. Then, from out in the middle of the lake, even above the howling of the wind and the beating of the hailstones, she heard its roar coming at her. It sprang with the speed of a lion leaping for its prey. The force of it blew over the gazebo and sent the lawn furniture scattering across the patio. She struggled to stand against it. Suddenly, the terrible whirring as of hornets in wing flight. 10,000 on the left, 10,000 on the right. She flung her arms wildly about her head, pulling at her hair. The wind as sharp as a winter's knife, the ice flew at her, stinging and blinding her. No.
She screamed. The word hurled back in her face. She tried again, and the wind shoved her scream down her throat. Her mouth filled with hail. Step by step, it drove her back. Ice crystals flew at her, battering her face, tearing her clothing. The roar was deafening. Janie retreated into the mansion. She raced through the rooms, locking every door and window, closing every blind, shutter, and drape.
She turned on the alarms. Then climbed the stairs and ran to the room in the back, the one with no windows, the one with the mementos. She went in and shut the door behind her, looked around for a moment, turned off the light, sat down on the floor, and braced her back against the door. And then she waited. A storm had come to Chicago. Predicted, but surprising everyone when it arrived. It came out of the north, relentless as an ice sheet, as surely as a judgment from God. Rain, snow, and ice smothered the mansion and the guest house, the patio, the yard, and even all that grew in it, or on it, or under it. It flooded the pool that had been emptied for the winter. It inserted itself into every crack and crevice. It filled every valley and covered every hill under a heavy, flat, gray shroud. There was no thing that could hide from it. No thing that escaped it. No thing that was spared. Then the sound of blades sharpening blades, the breaking and shattering of glass as the air was shredded and cut to pieces. War drums boomed, and trumpets sounded as when the nation of Israel took the promised land, God was now taking back the earth. And the earth shook, and the heavens thundered. And there was weeping and the gnashing of teeth. And then it stopped. 7.5 billion souls held their breath. And there was a stillness on the land. Then the temperature plunged, and everything fell to 0K. Never again will I destroy all life by the waters of a flood. That was true. This time it would be ice. And so it ended as it had begun, the earth empty and void and the devil waiting in the deep freeze. Coda. The next day a notice was published in one of the Chicago newspapers. The body of Kelly Heffernan was found earlier this morning. It appears Ms. Heffernan died from suffocation. Police say they do not suspect foul play as all doors and windows of the house she was in were securely locked, and there was no sign of forcible entry. The exact cause of death is still being investigated. A family member, her aunt, stated Ms. Heffernan was distraught over the recent deaths of her mother and stepfather, as well as of an older man who was her lover. It is understood that Ms. Heffernan had a history of mental illness and had attempted suicide twice before.